doctors like those and physicians prescribe. Surgeons can operate, but they don't save your life. When the fever's burning, who helps you through the night? Gives you medication, checks your vital signs. When you wake up in recovery, who's right there by your side? With a smile and reassurance, restoring your self-pride. Thank the nurse that's nursing you. Saving your life, for saving your life, for saving your life.
You're listening to Health Cetera in the Catskills on WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains. The nursing shortage is a concern for most countries, including our own. And Dr. Cinda Rushton has been examining what's called nurse resilience and well-being in 20 health systems in Maryland. And her work is really relevant for health systems and nurses everywhere. Dr. Rushton is a registered nurse in the Anne and George L. Bunting Professor of Clinical Ethics at the Johns Hopkins University, their Berman Institute of Bioethics, and the School of Nursing, where she is also a professor of pediatrics. She is the chief synergy strategist for what's called the R3, Renewal, Retention, and Resilience Initiative for Maryland nurses. Cinda, welcome back to Health Cetera in the Catskills.
Well, thank you. It's such a pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yes, so tell us about this R3 study in the nurse report.
Well, you mentioned our Resilient Nurses Initiative in Maryland, and this is part of it. And we started our whole initiative back in 2020 at the beginning of COVID. We didn't really expect things to be as they were, but at that time, we did a sort of innovative engagement strategy to hear what nurses were struggling with and how they felt, what would help them and support them. And so we had planned to do a second one in the fourth year of our grant. And during that time, we got introduced to a new communication platform called Slow Talk. And so we partnered with them to engage nurses across our state in trying to understand what was the sort of identity of nurses post-COVID. What did they think was missing from how they were being understood both by their employers and by the public? And how did they want to be known? And so we engaged with Slow Talk, which is a communication platform where basically you can take any question, and this one we had designed around those issues, and invite people to participate in a small group dialogue process, similar to what we would do if we were in person, but in a audio-only format. And what great about it is you can participate from anywhere. And they found that actually the audio only component increases our engagement with each other, which is a little bit surprising. Mm. But what we saw throughout the conversations was nurses really engaged in a very authentic, honest way about their experiences. And then what they do is they take the data, they transcribe it anonymously, and then they're able to do sentiment and semantic analysis to try to identify the themes that come out of all of these series of Slow Talks that are focused on the same set of questions.
So before we get to some of the findings, I just want, who's funded this work? You mentioned funding.
Well, we are so fortunate in Maryland. We have the Nurse Support Program 1 and 2, which is a program that is funded through the Maryland Cost Review Commission. And it is funds that are gathered from our statewide hospitals that go into a fund that support two buckets of funding for innovation in nursing. NSP1 is for acute care, and NSP2 is for sort of the educational component for nursing. And so we were very fortunate to get a four-year grant that was an academic practice partnership and a statewide initiative. That's where the funding came from.
That's great. So, look, this is a very rich report, and at the end we'll give tell listeners how they can access this directly. But share some of the highlights of the findings from this work.
Well, what was really interesting to me is our partners in SlowTalk are not nurses. They are not healthcare professionals. They're communications and dialogue specialists. And when they did the analysis, they came up with three big themes about what was missing in nursing. And the big theme that was overarching in all of the comments was accounted for about two-thirds of the responses, was around relationships and how nurses felt that what was missing was relationships with their leaders, relationships with their colleagues, with their patients and their families, and ultimately with themselves. And so in a way that's not surprising, if you think about the work of nursing, that much of what nurses do is grounded in relationships. And when they've been overworked and they are exhausted, their ability to engage in those relationships is altered. And then when you add in the pandemic, where what happened was a lot of resentment and anger on the part of the public about many of the public health measures, nurses were the ones who often bore the brunt of that dissatisfaction, that anger, and violence against nurses really increased. And so the fuel for what nurses do really became tarnished by this change in their relationship with their patients.
And, you know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, and then, you know, our leaders, you know, under stress, many times go to a kind of command and control approach and very tactical communication. And I think it really left many nurses feeling that they were disconnected from their leaders as well.
Yes. And what the other thing that struck me, the other aspect other than relational was transactional was the theme. And that's the things like pay and working conditions, work hours, that kind of thing, benefits. And that's what health systems focus on. We have to pay the nurses more. Now, I was surprised to see that about a quarter of the nurses said pay was an issue because salaries for nurses have gone up so much. But I think it really speaks to these health systems are focused on the wrong things.
You know, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think at some level when you are exhausted and you feel overworked, it's easy to sort of think that the solution is just more money.
Yeah.
But I also think there's a lot of data that suggests that that isn't enough. And I think this report reinforces that even if we paid people a lot more, the satisfaction, the sense of engagement probably would not significantly change.
Yeah.
Until we actually change the relational environment.
Now, burnout was a big issue, of course. I think it was almost 62% of nurses said that burnout is a major issue. But at the same time, what was so interesting is that you had 36% saying that, you know, they still take pride and joy in the work. This one quote you have, "This is just, it's still an awesome job. I still think becoming a nurse, it was a second career thing for me, and it's one of the best decisions I ever made. I don't regret having become a nurse for 1 minute."
You know, this is the sort of tension, I think, is
What I hear again and again from nurses, I just finished a retreat with a group of 25 nurses just now. Mm. And most nurses really do love being a nurse. They are doing it for reasons that are very fulfilling to them. And what they're really struggling with is the structures that they're working in are not supporting them to do the things that are meaningful and the things that they know they can do for patients, mm-hmm. which is their motivation.
Yeah.
And so they're left with this, what I would call, it's kind of a soul wound in a way. You know you can't provide what you could if you were supported in the way that, you know, would allow you to do that. It really begins to erode your sense of integrity.
Yeah.
I don't feel good about being a nurse.
Yeah. And I, you know, this idea that came out in your work about the public not really understanding and in some ways disrespecting nurses. They don't understand the work of nurses. And I have
yes.
to say, I have somebody staying with me for a few weeks, and he's a middle-aged adult, and he was talking about a friend of his who went to nursing school and was blown away by how challenging it was. I don't think the public has a clue about how difficult nursing school is and how the job is so complex.
Yes, Diana, I think that's absolutely true. Just as an aside, today there was a unit coordinator who was part of our group. The majority, all the rest of the participants were nurses. And what she said was, I am in awe of what you do. I watch what you do every single day, and I am so privileged to be able to be part of your support system. But I see what you do. And I think that's also part of what is challenging for nurses is they don't feel fully seen either by the public, and also they're concerned that their leaders don't fully appreciate
yes.
the complexity of what they're doing.
Yes, I agree with that. Years ago, when I was working at Beth Israel Medical Center in New York, we set up a day for the top administrators to spend a day with a nurse. Well, they couldn't last the whole day. Some of them lasted an hour. Some of them lasted for the morning. And they were amazed at what nurses were doing and didn't have and admitted that they hadn't had really an understanding of the complexity of the work. And that's the other thing that came out in you asked nurses, asked them what they thought was missing from the public narrative about nursing. And the top one was how skilled we are. But also on this list was that they are the patient's most effective advocates. That really struck me. I hadn't really thought about that, about how does the public see nurses as advocates?
Well, that's interesting because, you know, I do think there's a lot of misconceptions about what nurses do until you are the recipient of nursing care.
Yeah.
And then I think that patients often will say, it was the nurse who was the translator. It was the nurse who brought up the questions. It was the nurse who talked to me and listened to me. And so, you know, the advocacy role, I think nurses take very seriously. But I wonder if there's not an opportunity to make more explicit the ways in which nurses do that. I mean,
yeah.
think about it, Diana. You
yes.
know, it's the conversations you're having in the hallway,
yes.
When it's on rounds and in report. Those are all acts of advocacy.
Yes, yes. I was also surprised, although it was just a few people who said it, that they didn't think that what was missing from the public narrative was how close it is, the healthcare system is to falling apart, and the
mm-hmm.
fact that nurses are the glue. That really struck me.
Well, I would say, you know, if you talk to lots of people, I think that isn't wrong, because if you think about what nurses do, especially in acute care settings,
Can a hospital actually function without a sufficient nursing workforce? I think the answer is no. And I think that if the public and if society doesn't invest, I think in the current environment, we are going to begin to see some very serious consequences of not having sufficient nurses to be the eyes and ears for the other members of the team, to be the guardian of safe passage through the healthcare system, to be their advocate. It feels in some way that those skills and those contributions have been taken for granted.
I agree with you, and I have concerns that health systems are now looking to invent other roles or find other ways to get around hiring nurses without realizing that if you're going to have somebody replace a nurse and they don't have a nursing education, they're not replacing the nurse. You're not getting the full package.
Not at all. And, you know, I think one of the opportunities here is for nursing to step back and ask ourselves, as we have in the past, what part of what I'm doing actually requires my skills? And are there things that could be transferred to someone else that don't require the knowledge, the skills, the competence that nurses have? That might be the better question instead of replacement.
Yes. I was also struck by some of the respondents said, what was missing from the public narrative is that we're human too.
Yeah.
And I thought about what are the implications for that for patients and families as well as administrators?
Such a great, you know, one of the participants said as we've been doing this project, I am a person first and a nurse second. So sort of see me as a human being, not a number, not a widget in a wheel. I am a person. And so it really has implications for how leaders and health systems think about nurses as human capital rather than, you know, labor. And you know, I just did a kind of conversation with Olga Yakusheva here at Johns Hopkins, who's an economist, and she is really advocating for a human capital economic model, which is a big shift in how we think about our workforce.
Yeah. So let's move to the implications of this then. What else should health systems and health leaders be doing to try to think differently about how to promote nurse resilience, retention, and recruitment?
Well, I think the first thing goes back to the human capital that nurses are, and that nurses are a scarce resource, and we need to invest in our human capital in order to deliver patient outcomes and organizational outcomes. There's just no question about that. And the starting point, I would say, is leaders need to really listen in a different way. Listen to really understand what are the pebbles in their shoes. How would they, nurses at the front lines, for example, how would they solve those problems? And create better communication mechanisms to truly capture the wisdom that nurses bring to their work. Involve them in more meaningful ways. I think there's a gap in trust. I think that trust between leaders and nurses at the point of care has been deeply diminished during the pandemic, and it's going to take some real targeted and sustained attention to regain that trust. And that means being accessible. It means you know, taking a trip from the C-suite to the actual point of care and to to witness what is happening in those environments. And part of that is also explaining the rationale for the decisions that are being made. Mm-hmm. I think the tactical communication of just do this, follow this policy is not sufficient anymore. Mm-hmm. People want to know why. They want to understand the reasons and what went into those reasons in order for them to feel that they can, first of all, understand them, but also implement them without too much angst.
And in fact, you know, you're the people who participated, one of the things that they pointed out needs to be done is responding to this idea that nursing is pivotal to functional and patient-focused healthcare.
Yeah.
And the idea of how do you improve health? Give nurses a seat at the table.
Exactly.
And I don't think people realize the extent to which these people with all of this knowledge, skill, and wisdom, and who are there with patients, are often not at the tables where decisions are being made about patient care.
100%. 100%. You know, we always say, if you got a problem, ask a nurse.
Yes.
Because they're going to likely be able to figure something out. Because that's what nurses do. We're always in the interstitial spaces trying to figure out how to make complex systems work and to, you know, be able to serve the people that we've committed to serve. So absolutely, you know, let's expand the table, and maybe we don't need to ask for permission anymore. We should just show up.
Just show up. Bring your own chair if you have to, as Shirley Chisholm
exactly.
said.
Exactly.
So nurses obviously are not passive players in all of this. What do we have to do as nurses?
Well, I think the first thing is that nurses need to stand in their power. Mm-hmm. I think nurses need to speak up and to talk about their experiences in a constructive way. I think nurses need to value themselves.
Yes.
They really, again, I just left this group, and that was one of the big takeaways. Mm-hmm. I am a nurse, mm-hmm. and I belong here. And I have important skills and knowledge that are needed in order to make good decisions and to make systems work.
Yeah.
So I think we've got to embrace what's already there.
You know, back in, I want to say, the 80s, there was a lot of conversation. I was doing some writing about this. You probably were, too, about nurses were typical oppressed group, showing a typical oppressed group behavior. I think Susan Roberts was the person who started writing about this. And this idea that we regard ourselves as powerless. And just what you're saying, that we need to step into our power and own that power in a constructive way. I also think there may be generational differences in this. So when you do this work with nurses, as you've just done today, do you see a difference in the older nurses versus the younger ones in terms of stepping into your power?
Of course. and that's interesting, too, because that was one of the themes in the report, you know, is we now have this multi-generational
yes.
workforce, and there are differences. And, you know, it's not that either one is wrong. It's they're different. Mm-hmm. And how do we leverage the you know, different mm-hmm. worldviews of, you know, our younger nurses are my students.
Yeah.
They have a different kind of view. They
yeah.
want to do meaningful work. They also want to have clear boundaries about their professional and their personal lives. They have some really innovative ideas that probably are, you know, really innovative. And so we need to listen to them as
yeah.
well.
Yeah. And then for people who are family members or friends of nurses, what implications are there for them from this work?
Well, you know, the DAISY Foundation and AARP have started an initiative to help basically the public to acknowledge the contributions of nurses in the interactions that individual patients, families, and nurses have together. So that's one concrete way. But another part of that is that it's important for the public to understand the role of nurses, but also to partner with nurses, because that partnership is what is necessary for good outcomes. Mm. So, you know, helping nurses understand who they are and what their values and preferences are is one part of the equation, but the public also has to do their part in, you know, engaging in creating health plans that that will help them stay out of our acute care setting and to be healthy, but also to work together toward trying to get the best outcomes as possible.
Yes.
And you know, it's kind of simple.
And I like to encourage people to, you know, if there's a nurse in your family, when that nurse comes home, ask him or her, tell me about something that happened today that you felt like you really made a difference. Start to ask about what their work is about. I once, when I was teaching, had RN to BSN students. I would have them go back and ask your family members, what do you think I do as a nurse? And the next week they'd come back and they'd say, I'm getting divorced, or I'm never speaking to my mother again. I mean, it was really pretty. They were appalled by what came out of their loved one's mouths. But part of that is on us to share what the work is about. But also, I think having family members and friends just affirm that the work that this person is doing is really important, it's valued work, and that you really respect what they do. So I encourage people to have those conversations. Well, we're almost out of time, but I wanted to first find out what's next for this work. Are you continuing this work, Cinda?
Well, we actually are.
Good.
And we are embarking, Slow Talk, in addition to some other strategic partners, in doing a series of Slow Talks with unit-based nurse managers, because we know that they are a linchpin in this whole process.
They are.
And so we are going to be doing a series with them, and we'll let you know what happens.
Great. And for people who would like to read this report, how can they find it?
They can find it at nursing.jhu.edu/R3.
One more time.
nursing.jhu.edu/R3.
Or just Google R3 nurse report.
Resilience.
Resilience.
If you do R3 resilient nurses, it'll come up.
Great. Well, Cinda Rushta, I want to thank you so much for coming back on to Health Center and the Catskills to talk about this. We've been talking with Dr. Cinda Rushton, a registered nurse and the Anne and George L. Bunting Professor of Clinical Ethics at the Johns Hopkins University's Berman Institute of Bioethics and a professor of pediatrics in the School of Nursing and chief synergy strategist for this R3 work. Thank you so much, Cinda. Good work.
Diana, thank you for inviting me.
And we'll talk again. We'll have you back on again.
Sounds great.
Have a good one. Bye-bye. Yeah, if you can, it's really important work. And if you know somebody who is a nurse, I urge you to talk with them about the work that they do and ask them about the tough moments, but also the moments where they really made a difference in someone's life. Well, you've been listening to Health Center in the Catskills. I'm Diana Mason.